So our topic, the second of the four mindfulnesses, and so the first mindfulness was mindfulness of the guru, and the second mindfulness is altruistic aspiration to become enlightened for the benefit of all beings. Third mindfulness is mindfulness of the divine body, yourself, seeing yourself as a in a bodhisattva image form, to use that kind of language. And then the fourth mindfulness is the mindfulness of correct view, which has two aspects. The mindfulness of the correct view of emptiness or reality when you're sitting on the meditation cushion, and then when you're in the ordinary world. So those are the four mindfulnesses. And this is, just as a review, this is a teaching, a summary teaching that the seventh Dalai Lama put together for people like us with limited memories. Well, he didn't really, but it's a nice thing to say. Actually, it works that way. But it's very pithy. I mean, the Tibetans over time, they just kept getting more and more pithy. So last time we met, I played this recording that I thought so highly of Zatshoje talking about guru yoga. And you know, it was maybe in some ways difficult to listen without seeing a video and that sort of thing. But what he spoke to that I thought was so important, just to summarize, because all of these four things are connected with each other, what he spoke to was the way in which the practice of guru yoga is really about connecting with your own deepest self. Because what the guru represents is your own deepest self kind of cultivated into the form of somebody with great experience and great understanding and a good heart. And so the only difference between you and the guru is that he's more evolved than you, to use that kind of language. But otherwise, you know, I mean, he starts out just like you do. He just applied himself more, either in this lifetime or many lifetimes. But the point is that the guru, the essence of the guru, and what attracts you to the guru, and what teaches out of the guru to you, is the same as what's already in you. It's your own deepest self. And so you see it when you see him. And similarly, when you meditate yourself in the form of a bodhisattva or a Buddha, whether it's Manjushri or Tara or Yamantaka or anything, that's just a way of representing that deep quality of yourself in a certain aspect. So, as he was saying, you know, the guru, the student, the bodhisattva image, the yidam technically is the Tibetan term for it, they're all the same, and they connect. There's a place where they connect. Maybe that's what the language that he used was, there's a place where they all connect. He didn't say the same. I said the same. He said they connect. And that's a very interesting issue. Are they the same or do they connect? And Tibetans and other Buddhists have kind of wrestled about that issue. Are we the same in essence, or are we different, and how does that work? And I'll talk more about that. But the point is that minimally, in guru yoga, you find the place, guru yoga, you find the place where you and the Lama and the Yidam connect. And I focused on that teaching because it's been so important to me in my own practice, because in spring, when we were in Long Beach, His Holiness reiterated the importance of that. And 20 years ago when we saw him, after our first Lama died, and we were kind of like, oh, our Lama's died, and we were all heartbroken and all this kind of stuff, he kind of looked at us and he said, that doesn't matter. Whether he's dead or alive doesn't matter. You know, if you're doing guru yoga, you can find him, whether he's in the body or not. And so that's what you need to learn to understand. So this has been a theme for me, and that's one of the reasons that I emphasize it. So second mindfulness, the mindfulness of altruism, and how does that connect with all of this? So, I mean, technically, if you look at what it's about the bodhisattva vow. Altruism in the Buddhist context is about the bodhisattva vow, which is that I'm doing what I do to benefit all beings. I'm not doing what I do just to benefit myself. And one of the things the Tibetans have pointed out in regards to Americans trying to understand this is all beings include you. And I think it's our Judeo-Christian thing that when we think about being altruistic, somehow we have this idea that there's some kind of zero-sum game going on. It's like, in order to take care of you, I've got to bleed for you, I've got to sacrifice me. It's like, if you're going to get something to eat, I have to starve. If I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to have to beat myself up and not take care of myself. This is not the Buddhist view of this at all. The Buddhist view is that we're looking at an attitude in which everybody benefits. And so when one talks about all beings, one talks about everybody, and that includes oneself, and it's really easy for us to forget that. The other thing is, it sounds so grandiose and highfalutin, and if we're really honest with ourselves, we probably will say, well, yeah, but really I'm doing this because I need something. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's like, why am I practicing meditation? It's because I'm screwed up. Why am I practicing meditation? It's because my mind is completely berserk all day long if I don't center it in the morning. Why am I practicing meditation? Because I enjoy it. Why am I practicing meditation? It's the only time in 24 hours I get any peace. Why am I practicing? I mean, you know, go on and on and on. So, I this, I that, I the other thing. And the Tibetans say, you know, what Mahayana Buddhism is all about is we're doing this for everyone. And that sounds... that has sounded to me throughout my life mostly as being utterly impossible. And it's like I'm being dishonest if I say anything other than I'm doing this for me. But there's a certain way in which that's also not true. And there's a certain way in which if you can extend yourself into the possibility of doing meditation practice or doing any of the practices that are kind of proposed in Buddhism, there's a certain way in which you're practicing something, I think the Dalai Lama calls it wise selfishness or smart selfishness. And it's sort of like we're so busy being concerned about ourselves that we undermine ourselves. You know, it's like, and I found this, that when I spend all my time thinking about this person did this nasty thing to me, or I'm unhappy about that, or I wish I had the other thing, or why couldn't I have more of this? Why am I so old and decrepit? Why am I this? Why am I that? It makes me really miserable, you know? And if I could just stop for a minute, and sometimes I do, just stop for a minute and think about, what does this student need that's here talking to me? Forget about what do I need and what am I concerned? What does this person need, you know? I mean, what does this person in Safeway who's checking me out with my groceries need because they look so miserable? It's like, it really helps me not to look at the grocery bill when I'm thinking about what they really need, you know? I mean, that's sort of an extreme way of talking about it, maybe not even true. But it gets at the idea. I mean, those little moments that I have when I'm actually thinking about something other than the ongoing narrative, me, me, my, I, ooh, 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 you know, there's this whole other space that opens up, which is really nice. It's a great relief to not be thinking about me all the time and not having the narrative about me and my and I and the. And it's really hard to get into there, but it's really nice when I get into there. And then the really amazing thing I've noticed is His Holiness is absolutely right. When I get into that place, I feel a whole lot better. So that's the weird whammy on the whole thing is he's right. As soon as you stop being completely focused on what do I want and get focused on what somebody else wants, you get what you want. It's very weird, but in my limited experience, because I'm such an egomaniac, it's very true. that as soon as you can get into that place, it's extremely satisfactory and very pleasant. So they're right about it, as I said, from my limited experience. And it's kind of an amazing practice to be thinking about, I am doing this. Even our language makes us say, I am doing this. But okay, so it does. I am doing this to benefit others. Now, you know, I'm not talking about this in a Christian sense. Nothing against Christianity when I say this. But it's a different attitude. And the Christian attitude may have this embedded in it that I'm talking about. You know, I mean, maybe Mother Teresa would say, you idiot, that's what I've been saying all this time. Why didn't you think about this? You know, that's always what I've been saying. And then I've just been too dense to get that message. But a lot of the Christian message that I hear doesn't sound that way. But maybe that's just me. But I'm sure the Buddhist message is a somewhat different message because it's a Buddhist message. I mean, we're all human beings, and in that way it's the same. But I think it's also different. And it's this intentional, I think, you can have this intentional wise selfishness, which is, I'm really doing this for everyone, and that includes me, and I know that it'll all be better because of it. And it relates to guru yoga in a really interesting way, because I want to kind of link back to that. And again, I'm speaking from my own experience. I'm not talking about abstract philosophy or something here. I guess I am, but I'm really speaking from my own experience. For one thing, why in the world would somebody like Lhotse Rinpoche, my teacher, who's 86, can hardly walk, and really doesn't want to fly, why would he get on an airplane and go halfway around the world and sit still to talk to me when, you know, from his point of view, he's got to be looking at me and saying, this guy is such a mess. And I tell him the same stuff over and over again, and he never remembers anything I tell him. It's like, why am I wasting my time with him? I mean, that would be rational, but that's not what's on his mind. You know, I mean, what's on his mind is something else entirely. And it's like this incredible kindness that he gives himself. Or, I mean, you look at the Dalai Lama. I mean, he doesn't need anything from the world. He's gotten everything. He's had everything since he's been, you know, found. It's like he goes to the Colosseum someplace, and 10,000 people show up, and they collect a bunch of money and give it to him. And he says, that's nice. Now give it to this charity, that charity, the other charity. I don't want any of it. And he doesn't keep any of it. I mean, what does he need it for? He's not doing this because he's getting anything out of it. I mean, is he going to get, like, fame? No, I don't think so. Is he going to get to meet some movie stars? No, he's already met them all. You know, what is he going to get out of it? You know, he doesn't get anything out of it except he does it. And he has this unbelievable schedule. I mean, there is not 5 minutes in his day that's wasted. I mean, wasted. There's not 5 minutes of his day that's not put to some intentional use. That's what I'm trying to say, you know. And all these teachers are the same way. When we were in in Atherton, you know, at one point, Rinpoche said, "Well, I'm, you know, it's like, okay, you guys have to leave now, basically. Okay, I've got to have dinner because after I have dinner, it'll be 5 o'clock, and then I have 5 hours of prayers to do, and I have to wake up at 5 a.m. to do my thing so I can go to this other place." It's like, he's 86 years old. Why is he spending all this time? He says prayers, but he means meditation. What is he doing? Why is he doing this? You know, and why is he giving us time in the middle of all of this? You know, so this is what these people do. And they're expressing in themselves this kind of altruism, you know? I mean, what else would it be? I mean, you know, I'm sure that the way I would look at a kindergarten student who is asking me about Buddhism has got to be the way he looks at me. I mean, you know, I'm quite sure that that's the case. So, like, why would he? But he does. And they're all like that. They're all like that, you know. And in our own way, we're like that, you know. I mean, there are things that we all do that are like that for other people. And when we're in that space, then we also connect with them, and that's the point. When we're in that space, we connect with them intimately in some deeper way than the ordinary utilitarian way most people relate to each other. And there's something deep and vital that comes out of that connectedness, and we know it. So, you know, we can build on that. And I think that that's what this idea here is about, that, you know, those of us who teach at the university, I mean, you know, why do we do it? I mean, the pay sucks, right? You know, why do we get up in the morning and spend all these hours doing this? You know, we all could be doing other things that would pay us a lot better, I'm sure. Well, some of us, I probably couldn't, but most people at the university could. Well, maybe you couldn't either. Nah, you don't think so? Well, anyway. Yeah, all right. Well, maybe it's too late. It's probably too late for most of us, but at one time we could have when we were younger. I mean, I had an opportunity. You know, I got into this thing where, like, Wall Street was calling. I was sitting in the middle of Manhattan, and people were looking at me and saying, put a whole lot of zeros behind that number we're talking to you about. And I just sort of looked at it and said, I can't do this. You know, this, I can't do it. This is not me. I don't care. It's like, yeah, I'd love to have all that money, but I can't live that way. I can't do this thing, you know. So we're nourished in this. We connect with others deeply in this. And it changes, and from the Buddhist point of view, it changes the way we practice. But it's very hard to take on a practice and wrap ourselves around the idea that when we sit down to meditate in the morning, why are we doing it? And it's a practice in itself. I mean, at the moment, I can't say anything more about that, really. It's a practice in itself. I mean, it's hard enough to sit down. Well, for most people, it's hard enough to sit down every morning and meditate. If you do it for enough years, it just becomes habitual. But then it becomes really hard to sit down and meditate and why am I doing it? Because it's easy to sit down and meditate because it feels good when it gets to the point where it feels good. It's easy to sit down and meditate because it feels good. But it's not so easy to sit down and meditate and it feels good, but that's not why I'm doing it. And that's a challenge. But actually, and I'll wrap it up with a statement, it is true that when we turn it around this way, that it feels better, and then there's this other hidden thing in here, which is really the corker in it all, as far as I'm concerned, which is, why do the lamas give us so much? They give it to us so we can pass it on. And the more we pass it on, the more they give it to us. It's, now I'll get metaphysical here, but it's like a spigot, you know? It's like if we're open this much, you know, 2 inches, and they're pouring it through us, and it's only that much is going out to somebody else. If we can open it up and put more out for others, then there's more that's going to come in through us. And it just builds, and it just builds. And the more that my experience, the more that I can give, the more that I receive. And I'm not just talking about receiving from the people that I give to. I'm talking about receiving from the source. And the source is not just, you know, my personal lama. The source is that source, which is the Lama Yidam, all the lamas, all the great teachers of all times and places. That's where it all comes out of. But you have to open yourself up and give more in order for more of that stuff to come through. That's the real wise selfishness. Anyhow, that's been my experience.